LuckyMojo.com. I'm your announcer, Papanuta, Papanuta.com in San Edward, Nebraska, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Conjurman Ali of ConjurmanAli.com in Mission Viejo, California, and our special co-host, Madam Nadia of MadamNadia.com in Chicago, Illinois. This week, we'll be joined by a special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Reworkers, Professor Porterfield of ProfessorPorterfield.com in Denton, Texas, bringing us today's topic of veneration in cemeteries. Afterwards, they will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, or root work as defined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooist of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you selected from among those who have signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Conjurman Ali and Madam Nadia. Conjurman Ali?
Thanks, Professor. Thanks, Papa Newt, for that wonderful introduction and filling in for the lovely Miss Tammy Lee. As everyone can tell from my sultry, velvety voice, I'm not Miss Cat. Miss Cat is away for the weekend, and we wish her safe trips and fun times, and we look forward to her return next week. And filling in for her is the wonderful and unique Madam Nadia, who is a regular on our show, and we're very, very excited to have her on. And our guest is Professor Porterfield, another regular and fan favorite, if I may be so presumptuous to say so on behalf of the fans. Some quick updates before we check in with Madam Nadia, Professor Porterfield. The 1 hour fallback that happened, daylight saving time. I don't believe Miss Cat and Nagashiva actually follow daylight saving time, so I'm not mistaken. But that one extra hour of sleep has been a wonderful blessing, and I spent the morning catching up on all sorts of email work. Sunday has turned into kind of my admin day, and so if people are waiting for emails, you probably got it today. So I'm very happy to say that I am steadily catching up on the never-ending list of emails, and I'm sure Madam Nadia and Professor Porterfield can both attest to the fact that being a root worker, a good percentage of your time, in addition to doing all sorts of mystical, magical things, is doing the very banal work of responding to emails. And there's a lot. There's always a queue of emails. I don't think it's been years since I've ever had, it's been fully caught up, like no pending emails. There's always someone to respond to, and they're generally in large, large chunks of them. So that is my very mundane news for today. Nothing overly special, just me catching up on some emails. Madam Nadia, thank you for joining us. What have you been up to?
Oh, I have been up to all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things. I love this. The season is just so great to connect to all kinds of spiritual things and reload our spiritual guns, so to speak, because the connection to the other side or other sides, if you will, is so easy. Mm-hmm. The veils are so thin. So on that end, I've been experiencing working with all with different spirits that I'm not mm-hmm. usually used to work with. And yes, another hour of sleep for a root worker, it's just like a blessing. You can't, nobody's going to say no to that. How can you say no to that? It's just another hour of sleep. And we are, I don't know, I know that it's me, but I'm pretty sure that both of you are as well, that we're sort of creatures of the night and there's a lot of stuff.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yeah, and
both of us are nocturnal because we text each other really late, or we'll chat up, and we're pretty late. We're nocturnal creatures.
Oh yeah. It would be like 5 a.m. my time, or 3 a.m. your time. And it's all in, you know, it's in the working. So another hour is a blessing, and I'm really excited that the show today is falling on the 1st of November, which is All Souls Day, and I know that Professor for the show is going to talk to us about that. So I'd love to hear his lovely voice, Professor.
Oh, yeah. I'm very much looking forward to this particular topic. Actually, you bring up a good point. This is a fantastic season for a specific type of magical working, and I think it's a very timely discussion. But before we dive into the discussion, let's check in with Professor Porterfield and see what you've been up to.
Well, let's see. The official heat is absolutely gone from Texas. We've now had 3 days of rain here, and that was interesting yesterday as they came to my house and pulled out windows and put in new windows. So I'm living the high life, folks. I got new windows and just amazed about them. And today is I have to take a little selfish moment and wish my dear wife, Christy, a very happy anniversary. Today is our 18th anniversary.
Oh, how beautiful.
So somehow she's put up with my silly ass for 18 years, and that's the record, folks. No one's done it that long. Even my parents were like, oh, it's 18, go, we're done, enough of you. And so that's basically what's going on here. I do also want to take a brief moment to say that tomorrow, November 2nd through the 6th, Lucky Mojo, our dear Miss Cat, is going to be doing this year's third and final apprenticeship week at Lucky Mojo. And so I know that there are going to be many people already gathering in Forestville for that, and I wish them all well. It's a wonderful time, and guys, good luck in your apprenticeship.
Oh, I love the apprenticeship. I think it's a fantastic, fantastic idea. If you haven't considered it, seriously do so. Why? Because we talk about hoodoo as a living tradition, and there's some things that you have to learn hands-on. And so the apprenticeship is a very old tradition. It's a way of keeping a method of teaching, a method of pedagogy alive that is very important to hoodoo, which is hands-on training. So if you've completed the course is a fantastic introduction. Definitely follow it up with the apprenticeship. So I highly, highly recommend it. And, of course, happy anniversary and congratulations to both yourself and Christy, Professor Porterfield.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk a little bit about our discussion today, which is veneration in the cemetery, or veneration of the ancestors in the cemetery, or the dead in the cemetery. This is a very important topic, and it's different from the topics that we've had in the past. We've talked about ancestor work in the past. We've talked about working with the dead in the past, but we haven't actually talked about working in the cemetery. More often than not, the discussion is about how to leave something in the cemetery, dispose of something, deploy something, gather cemetery dirt or graveyard dirt, how to work with the ancestors. But working in the cemetery hasn't actually, as far as my recollection, been brought up on the radio show before. So it's going to be a new panel, a very interesting panel. A couple words about it, and then we're going to turn this over to you, Professor Porterfield, and ask you to guide us where you want to go with this topic. Veneration in the cemetery, or working in the cemetery, is part of traditions around the world. It's not unique to hoodoo. You find it in the ATRs, the African diasporic traditions. You find it in European traditions. You find it in Middle Eastern, all over the world. You'll find in Latin American, various forms of it. Some of it are very overtly magical in nature, meaning that the person does so with the intent of magic. This may be things like working with Santísima Muerte in the Latin American, Mexican folk tradition. Some of it is cultural, and while it has powerful, symbolic, and spiritual potency, it's not always done with a conscious intent of doing some form of magic. For example, decorating of graves is a way that people venerate the dead in the South. But not everyone realizes that they're doing something magical or even consider that. It's simply part of the culture, part of these folk or popular religious practices, leaving bottles of alcohol, flowers, and things like that. Even funerary rites are forms of veneration in the cemetery. They're done to appease, placate, and to settle the spirits of the dead. They're also a way to heal. They've become somewhat symbolic and rote nowadays in modern society, but they had a very important religious and spiritual function at one point. It's a timely topic in particular because of today's date. We have, Halloween, All Hallows Eve, All Saints Day, are all very, very important days. I would say the entire season is quite important. End of September is several saints' days, including the feast day of Saint Cyprian, which mm-hmm. in many traditions involves works in the cemetery, followed up this month. Well, this is just in the Latin American tradition, in the African diasporic tradition, the several days both in October and in November are days where the people go out and venerate the spirits of the dead, including the gatekeeper of the dead or the bone herd, and in the tradition of hoodoo as well, which is deeply rooted in the practices in the South. These days, while not, there isn't an official Day of the Dead, as for example in Mexico or Latin American traditions, or even in some European faith traditions, there is the act of going out to cemeteries, decorating graves, visiting ancestors, visiting deceased relatives. So it is a very, it's tied to a seasonal act. It's not just symbolic, it's not just spiritual. There is something about timing that is particularly important. So this is a great topic for this particular panel. Professor Porterfield, why don't you introduce us a little bit about what veneration in the cemeteries mean for you and what type of practices you want to discuss in this panel.
Yes, thank you. Well, as you mentioned, today is a timely topic because today is All Saints Day, All Hallows, Day of the Saints, Hallow Mass, and of course it is also the Day of the Dead, Dia de Muertos, and so we see a lot of this at this time of year. And of course, in the African American community and in the Hoodoo tradition, we do have that. Earlier, we have that around Memorial Day or Grave Decoration mm-hmm. Day, and you made a very yep. salient point that this is something that is that crosses many lines. It's not simply mm-hmm. magical. It's not simply religious. It also falls into what's called civil religion,
yes.
you know, where we have all of that. But the point that I wanted to make today, outside of it just being a very timely, hey, today's November 1st, let's talk about this. Was that many, many years ago, decades and decades ago, a phrase was said to me that has stuck with me, oh, now these many, many long years. And it was from one of the gentlemen who helped guide me and teach me hoodoo, and he said to me that the thing one has to remember about the graveyard is, he said, Charlie, that is a separate country.
Mm-hmm.
And that phrase has always stayed with me, that is a separate country. And that when we go and when we are going to go work in the graveyard, when we are going to go clean the graveyard, when we're going to go speak with those who are now there, we are entering into a separate country. And a lot of us think of that as a spiritual event. We're crossing some boundary. But for me, that phrase held a little more meaning. To me, it was like, wow, this is, you know, like I've got to go get my passport, right? Mm-hmm. I've got to get all, you know, everything together, and I've got to go through all of that thing, just as if I was going to say, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to get on a plane and go to Japan. I'm just going to get on a plane and go to France. I'm going to get in the car and drive down to Mexico. I'm entering a separate country. And part of the reason I wanted to talk about this today is because I have seen that as the traditions expand and as they go out into the fore, into the larger community, some of that gets lost. And we have that same, if you will forgive me using this term, colonialism that we see in other things, which is where people just think, oh, I can just go to Tibet, man. I can just go to Tibet and buy up all this groovy jewelry and all this spiritual stuff they've got, and I can come back and just decorate my house with it and wear, man, I don't have to be sensitive to the fact that these are Tibetan people and what's going on in Tibet. And I have seen that exact same attitude with the graveyard. It's just a place, right? It's just another, it's just more grist for the mill. And so what I wanted to talk about today was, no, this is a separate country. This is a place that you enter into that has a different set of rules. It has a different language. It has a different experience. And you are the visitor. You are. Now, someday you're going to move there and you're going to stay there. That's it. You're going to, we're all going to retire there. Okay. It's bigger than Florida. But. But for now, we are visitors. And this idea of going into that country and having a responsibility there, not only to our kin, whether they be, be related by marriage, love, or blood, but also to those who we are going to work with, who we are seeking assistance. And it's all well and good, you know, we have this tradition of, all right, you're going to go to the grave that you're going to work with, you're going to leave particular offerings. But what often gets missed is adding something to that country. Cleaning graves.
Yes, very important.
Participating in the care of that cemetery. Participating in that. And that is something that, particularly here in the West, some of us are a little averse to. Meaning, oh, we'll overcome that hurdle of working with the dead, but we don't want to necessarily have a responsibility to the dead. So I wanted to bring that up. And also I thought, Conjure Man Ali and Madam Nadia, come on, this is exactly the topic I want to talk about with these two guys. I mean, come on.
Both of us, all three of us work quite heavily in Grego. And it is something that unfortunately is not. I mean, Ms. Kat discussed how there are students that are hesitant to even do graveyard work. And that's one of the hurdles that they overcome, much less actually, you know, because one of the homeworks that you have to do is collect graveyard dirt. And this really speaks, I think you brought up some very, very important points. And I'm going to speak to them real briefly, and I'm going to ask Madam Nadia about her work. Firstly, you brought up the idea of a separate country, and I think that's a very important point. Because that is unique to our current modern experience. That's not something that was particularly common a few centuries back. This is, for example, in African traditions, the dead live amongst you, right? The bad dead live away. They live across the sea or across the waters, or they live high up in the trees. But the dead are often buried where they die in their home. The idea being there is no necropolis, right? The idea of the necropolis or the city of the dead or the separate of the dead comes really from a European tradition as well as a Mediterranean tradition of where the dead are honored, venerated, and respected, but they're also kept somewhat separate. The Romans in particular were very big about this. And this has become very important for the modern world, that the dead are treated as having their own kingdom, so to speak, with their own rules, their own life, their own way of respecting them. But as time has progressed, and I would say with the rise of kind of secular rights, the rise of secular appropriation of religious traditions, so to speak. So a funeral is a predominantly religious act. It has always been. But as we, you know, adopted into a much more secular civil society, we start to lose that connection even further. So it's not just that they are separate now. It's that they are no longer even connected to us. And this is something you brought up that's very, very important. You know, people go in and they don't clean the graves. People go in and they don't do, you know, basic care or give back or even show respect in the cemetery. It's an act of retail purchase. You go in and you buy the dirt and you walk away. A commercialization, a consumption of the dead, so to speak. And this speaks to the type of weird nature of modern society, of modern secular society, right? That the dead, that even those that are magical practitioners, that are supposed to be in tune, that are supposed to be the conduits between the worlds, right? I mean, that's what the original role of the root worker, the shaman, the magician, all these people were. These people still view it as transactional more than they view it as relational, right? This idea of having a relationship with the dead, of having dual citizenship, so to speak, if I can borrow your analogy. So this is, I think, a very, very important point and why veneration is an important aspect of cemetery work that is often forgotten. Amanda Nadia, you work in the cemetery a lot, if I may be so bold as to speak on your behalf. You do. And you do some beautiful, fantastic work there that goes beyond the kind of, I'm going to buy some graveyard dirt and leave. You do work in the cemetery, and it involves not just magical work, but developing relationships with the dead. Can you speak a little bit about how this factors into your practice?
Absolutely. But first of all, I want to say that, in my opinion, the same idea of a commercial cemetery, it's like, well, people buying meat today, you know. They buy meat in a supermarket. It's covered in a saran wrap, and we, you know, that steak has no connection to the cow, because we don't participate in this process of growing those animals, investing in them, living with them, and then eventually eating them. The same thing is with the cemeteries, because you have this act that, you know, you say the prayers, you do go through the motions, and then your grandma or aunt or whatever is put in that little hole over there, you know, maybe it's a hole in the wall or a hole in the ground, and that's it, and everything looks pretty, and somebody's taking, you know, you pay somebody to take care of it. I think that is part of the problem. So we have, you know, it's like instead of another country, it becomes no man's land. And I think that in order to be able to connect to it, you really have to spend time there. I was, as part of my spiritual practice, my initial work was with Kali in Shakta Tantra. So in that particular tradition in the left path, you do a lot of work in the cemetery or the cremation ground called the shmashan. So you have all kinds of sometimes gnarly exercises that you would do there. So when I went to India, I did that. I went to the cemetery or the cremation grounds, and it was monsoon time, and you have to take your shoes off. You can't go with your shoes. So you go around, and there's all this mud, and you see things touch you, and you understand it's probably bones of the people that were in completely burned when they're dead, and you still have to continue walking and feeling that and experiencing that, and then you sit there and you meditate, and you have all these babas that live there and teach from there. So now you have the middle man, so to speak, that gives you teachings, and you are in the cemetery. And I think that their understanding of death is a little bit different because of the situation of the economics in the country and everything. But that was my first experience of actually doing serious, serious work. And I will never forget that feeling of walking barefoot in that mud, knowing that I'm touching, you know, the dead, and having to make peace with that, and having actually to feel something about it. It was a positive experience for me. And now when I do a lot of work in the cemetery, I think that I adopt cemeteries. It sounds kind of crazy, but there are a couple of places, you know, people that do work like us will always look for that one cemetery where you can go and you can do your stuff, and nobody's going to be standing there and looking at you and asking what you're going to do. So where I live, there is one cemetery like that that's completely, completely abandoned, and it was a larger place, and because they put a road in, they pushed it in, so it's all kind of cramped, and it's between buildings. I mean, it was very strange to find it, but the minute I came in there, it was like, hey, lady, what's up? Somebody's coming to visit us. So now when I'm going there, you know, first of all, I have guilt trips from them if I don't visit a lot. And besides doing my work, I would come there and I would leave things. And a lot of times spirits would guide me, and I would not know why I'm bringing from home this and that and the other thing. And then, of course, when I get to the cemetery, I realize why it was and who needed what. And you find, you know, that the dead have different personalities, and, you know, they chit-chat with you. And sometimes, you know, they will tell you, come with a certain idea, well, I need to bury this doll baby here, you know, let's be real. And you will get a suggestion, no, you have to do it over there, and that's going to be better because of this and that. So there's a whole relationship. And the minute you become part of this of this group, of this country, mm-hmm. you are obligated to take care of it.
Because I wanted to say I like the you used a very important word there. I mean, all of what you said was important, but there was something there that I really wanted to reemphasize, which is this idea of, quote, adopting a cemetery.
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we see this. I don't know if you have this. I don't know, you know, how this is in the rest of the country, but here in Texas, you drive along and you see, you know, the next 6 miles of highway adopted by
mm-hmm.
the JCs, by the Elks, by the whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out and they clean and they care for that stretch of highway to beautify it. And this is
mm-hmm.
a common idea. We have this idea, oh, people adopt something to help take care of it. And that is central to what I'm wanting to talk about today, that we have
mm-hmm.
to participate in these graveyards. We are adopting. And I have to tell
mm-hmm.
you that, you know, I have worked in the cemetery where Clyde Barrow is buried. And it's a very old cemetery in Dallas, Texas. It's very kind of off the beaten track. And when you go there, what you immediately become aware of is that this cemetery is not being cared for by a municipal entity. The edges of it are very, you know, sort of ragged. There's clearly not a lot of good cemetery care there until you get into the cemetery. And then suddenly you find not only offerings at the graves, in the trees, everywhere, and particularly, obviously, at Clyde Barrow of Bonnie and Clyde's
mm-hmm.
grave, but at his brother's grave, but spreading out as if that were the center of the cemetery, which it's not, it's the edge. You see the care of that cemetery. Here you suddenly start
mm-hmm.
seeing all of these graves are being tended. Someone's come in with a weed whacker. Someone's come in with hedge clippers. Someone's come in, and they're caring for this. And that is part of what removes, as Madame Nadia said, this meat market attitude.
Yeah.
Where we're
uh-huh.
just there to commercialize. We're just there to engage in a transaction. And I don't
mm-hmm.
want to mix too many metaphors today, but, you know, the old saying of, in the kingdom of the blind, the man with one eye is king.
Mm-hmm.
This has a translation here into the cemetery. We
mm-hmm.
come into that cemetery. It is the kingdom of the dead, okay? We can move back and forth. They cannot always anymore. They require things of us. It's not simply this one-way path. Hey, I need graveyard dirt. Hey, I need you to hold this at the grave. Hey, I need you to kill somebody. You know, they require things as well. And that is part of that veneration, is taking things to them, is bringing messages to them. People say to me, well, what do you take to a grave? What do you pay with, as an example? And there's all of these traditions. You pay with this amount of coins, that amount of coins, this, that, and the other thing. But I have to tell you that when I go to pay at a grave, I always bring things that to me, or the sensation that I'm getting or the information that I'm getting, relates to that individual. I bring appropriate
mm-hmm.
flowers to that individual. If I bring liquor or whiskey, I bring appropriate to that person, you know. And the
mm-hmm.
dead are not as, how do I want to put this? They are. It's not a transaction. They're not just sellers. You know, when I walk
mm-hmm.
into the grocery
Absolutely.
Store, when I walk into the grocery store, nobody gives me a hassle. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's standing in the soup aisle. The guy that shelves the soup aisle is not standing there going, nah, I'm sorry, I'm not going to sell you cream mushroom soup. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
What? Screw you. I'm here to buy soup. You know? No, I just walk
mm-hmm.
in, I buy, I leave. But I have to tell you, you know, living here in the South, as I do, I had a very educational moment a long time ago when I was going to work with a soldier's grave. And I was trying to find the right soldier's grave. Now, they're kind of easy to find because the military tombstones look a little different than the civil tombstones. And so I found it too. I was in a hurry, right? I'm just here to make a transaction. I was in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
I found a military tombstone. It had seemed to have a lot of heat around it. I was like, ah, somebody's awake here. Okay, I'll go and do this. I went. I said my words. I started my thing. And I got this in, I got smacked. I got smacked right upside the head. And this individual, clear as a bell, said to me, don't you do any of that damn, and then used the most disparaging word one can use for African Americans, magic, with me. And I jumped back, and I was like, whoa, what the dead just said the N-word. What's going on here? And I finally came out of my transactional place enough to look at that headstone, and it was a soldier of the Civil War. And I went, oh, right? It's not just a free-for-all. It's not just a every grave is equal. These are people. These are individuals. And death does not always, oh, everyone's dead, and so they're all changed little angelic entities waiting to help us with our hoodoo. No, bullshit.
That's a whole other show right there.
And this is,
yes, that's a whole other show.
Yeah, and you're highlighting a very important part of working with the cemetery, right? Adopting a cemetery is not an obvious thing. It's really, really important. You develop a relationship. Cemeteries, in addition to the dead, have their own personality, depending on who's buried there, how well it's taken care of, and so on and so forth. There are cemeteries with more soldiers in them. There are cemeteries with certain ethnicities in them. And these are all going to contribute to the character of the cemetery. Building a relationship with a cemetery, in my humble opinion, isn't, you know, an added bonus, but an essential part of being a root worker. If you're a root worker who is legitimately working in a tradition that has mediumship in it, healing in it, that works with the ancestors, you have a relationship with the cemetery. And this leads, in turn, to a relationship with specific spirits, helpers that you can rely on regularly to help you. The beloved Dr. E, who worked quite a bit with the cemetery, mentioned that, for example, in his work, he had a particular lumberjack that he would go to regularly for work because he was a hard worker. And this was because he had developed a relationship with both the cemetery and that particular spirit. And it involves you moving away from that kind of transactional mentality and really allowing yourself to enter into their kingdom, enter into the fact that theirs is a different place. And this was rooted in the idea that there are certain places in our world that have spiritual potency. It's very important in hoodoo. Hoodoo has certain symbols that it's associated with, certain things that we trace out, snake signs, X's, etc., that all mean something in hoodoo. In addition, there are places in hoodoo that are believed to be places of power. In Madame Nadia mentioned the veil, which is a very European kind of concept, this idea of the spirits of the dead being behind a veil, and certain parts of the world having a thinner veil. That's a very similar concept in hoodoo. For example, the river is a very spiritually potent place. It's about movement, transformation, and change. Big trees, big ancient trees are considered to be potent and powerful with very things at their roots, hanging things from their branches. The crossroads, the realm of the devil, right? It's where you go to invoke the black man on the crossroads. And spirits of the dead in the cemetery. In fact, if there's two places that can symbolically represent all of hoodoo, it is the crossroads and the cemetery. And then this can be argued to be a remnant of the African cults of the cemetery and the crossroads. There are the two main deities or spiritual potencies of Central African magic is that of the dead and that of the crossroads. And you find that today in hoodoo. I remember my teacher was very clear on this, you know, because she was a Protestant, raised in the Baptist spiritualist practice, and for her there were no saints, right? You didn't work with saints. You didn't call on, you know, St. Christopher or St. What's it called. I remember asking her about the saints, and she said to me, and this was, you know, an offense to anyone who's Catholic and works with the saints, this is just her tradition. She said, you don't need no saints. She said, you need God, the devil, and the dead. Those are the three forces you need in life. That's all she said, right? God, the devil, and the dead. You ask God to help you, you ask the devil to take out your enemies, and you call upon the dead for their guidance. And that was very big for her. And so working with the cemetery in a tradition that is not transactional, that moves towards veneration, that works on building a relationship, isn't just an added plus or kind of side corollary thing in hoodoo. It is essential for a root worker. You have to have that relationship. We have a couple minutes. I want to ask both Madam Nadia and Professor Porterfield, what are some really quick, simple things that people can do to start slowly building that relationship and move away from this kind of transactional mentality?
Well, I would say that the first thing is find yourself a cemetery that you're going to be working with. Don't just, you know, it's not just a random occurrence. Don't just throw a dart into a map. You know, mm-hmm. go to these places, find the places, and be willing to participate in it. My cemetery that I work in, big surprise to everybody, is the Mount Zion Cemetery. It's a little old antiquated cemetery here in my part of Texas, which remarkably, although it is now a Protestant cemetery, has at its heart the oldest graves there are Jewish graves. And so mm-hmm. going there, they were the graves that were the most uncared for. They were the most forgotten of graves because the Jewish population had moved away. So they were like, over here, hello, at last, what are you doing? So, you know, nobody's here, nobody, we got the Goyish, nobody's doing anything for us, bring some flowers, do something, leave a stone, you know? And so you have to participate. You have to get in there. You have to be a part of it. See about perhaps even being volunteering to go out to take out your weed whacker, to take out your lawnmower or your hedge clippers and say, hey, do you need anybody to come help? If you have a local society that's taking care of cemeteries, here in Denton we have a very rare historic slave cemetery that is not mm-hmm. publicized because they don't want people to damage it. And so there mm-hmm. is a actual society you have to join to go and help care for these very aged tombstones and this place. See if there's something there. Participate. Put something back in, even if it's just you alone. Become involved mm-hmm. with the dead. And again, I'm not talking about some spooky-ass way here. Everybody gets frightened and goes, oh, no, you know, I'm not good with that, and it scares me, and I don't want to, I'm not into all this, and I was talking about Palo, and all. No. You have to become involved with it. Don't think of this as going to the supermarket. Think of this as going someplace where you're going to deal with it.
Thank you. I think that is a very, very important advice. This was a great topic, and I think the additions and your ideas and insights provided by both of you were fantastic. I hope you do come back and do a part two about this, because there's so much more we can discuss. I think in the second part, maybe discussing more of what can be done, how are the ways to develop those relationships further, and really kind of develop your connection with the other side, to pardon that phrase, but to connect with the dead, because it is a very important part of it. So thank you for the topic, and thank you, Madam Nadia, as well, for your important insight. Papa Newt, why don't you take us forward, because it's time to start taking on our callers.
Certainly. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour with your hosts, Conjurman Ali and Madam Nadia, and this week's special guest, Professor Porterfield, will be right back. We'll be taking calls from our listeners, answering their questions through spiritual divination, and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. Our calling clients are selected from among those who have filled out a short questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. You can listen to the show online through Blog Talk Radio or via telephone by dialing 818-394-8535. If you filled out a client questionnaire at the forum, please dial in now to 818-394-8535 and press 1 to let us know that you're available to be on the air. We'll be selecting our callers by their area code, and if your area code is announced, I'd like you to say hello and let me, your announcer, Papa Newt, read a brief description of your situation before turning it over to our host. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our first caller. We have Lorraine calling from 646 from New York. Lorraine, are you there? Oh. Councilman Ali, do we have Lorraine on?
Her mic is on.
Yes, I'm here.
Hello?
Welcome. Welcome to the show. I see you're our first-time caller, so welcome. And you have not been to any other readers or root workers on this situation. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right.
That is correct.
Right. Thank you. My boyfriend and I broke up in August, and we still live together. I want us to be a couple again, but I'm unsure if I should because he has some anger issues. We are still intimate and are still close friends. Will we be together again? Turn it back over to you, Kajman Ali.
Thank you for reading that, Papa Nu. I think it's a interesting situation. Thank you for trusting us with your case. We're going to have Madam Nadia do the first reading for you. Madam Nadia, what do your cards say?
Let's see. My dear, tell me, how long have you been in this relationship?
About a year and a half.
About a year and a half. And what sign of the zodiac are you?
I'm a Taurus.
Mm.
And your partner?
Mm-hmm. Libra. Mm.
A Libra. Okay. Let's see what's coming up for you. I think that currently both of you are in a state of trying to figure out whether to be together or not. This is the Two of Pentacles that I'm getting, and I'm using a clone of the Rider-Waite deck, and we see a person who is juggling two coins. So for you as a Taurus, you're really more looking at the practical maybe aspects of it, but both of you are in the same boat. Both of you try to figure out what to do. And the second card that I have is the Eight of Pentacles. And in that card, we have a man who works in the workshop and building those pentacles, putting them together. So to me, it seems as if there is an opportunity to come together. There is an opportunity to work on it. However, the last card that I have is the Five of Cups. And in the Five of Cups, we see three cups falling down on the ground and a person who is very sort of sad and depressed. There are two cups behind him, but he's not seeing that. And his heart is heavy, and he looks at those three cups that fell down. So what I pick up here is that there is an opportunity to come together. However, because of the pentacles here, you will be the one that's going to be pushing, doing the legwork, you know, doing the talking, even, you know, possibly pushing for some sort of counseling. But in the end of things, this is not going to be so much worth the effort. This is what my cards say.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Nadia. I think that was a fantastic reading. For supportive field, if you can give us your insight.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. How are you, ma'am?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Well, what I have here is I have three cards. I read playing cards. And what I have here is I have the Seven of Clubs, the Queen of Hearts, and then the Seven of Spades. And so she's being bookended by these two black sevens. And the Queen of Hearts is a very kind and generally loving woman. This would be you. However, she has a bad tendency to wear her heart on her sleeve. And in this case, bordered as she is by these sevens and black sevens, it also shows that she has a certain degree of stubbornness. But it's not the stubbornness of, oh, a harsh woman or a person who's overly judgmental. This is the harshness that one sees from a mother. So, in other words, there is a degree of judgment here. Why did you do that? That's so stupid. That's so silly. Why don't you, oh, you drive me crazy. Why don't, blah, 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 blah. Okay?
Okay.
And so that's some of the energy you're putting into this. Then we have these two sevens. First of all, I'll tell you that in older readings, the idea of two sevens here is, and particularly two black sevens, is that there is some hidden treachery.
So there was something that was done here that, you know, shouldn't have been done, and it was done, and that's not helping. Okay? Then, divided up here, Seven of Clubs tells us that there is too many irons in the fire. The both of you have too much going on. Okay? You're not in a place where you are devoted to the relationship. You are devoted to other matters, and primarily those matters are going to be related to work and projects, school, and other things, but you're both kind of going in different directions, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And then from the outside here, we have the Seven of Spades, and I've got to be honest with you, not a great card, okay? Just not, it's not like, oh, the Seven of Spades, hooray. No. This is ill fortune, bad luck, possibly the interference of others because it is sitting here on the outside position. This is just, you know, I can't get ahead. I take two steps forward, three steps back, okay? It's that feeling that people, not when people are cursed, but when they say, oh, I feel like I'm cursed. You're not actually cursed, but it's the feeling that nothing goes right. I don't see that this is going to work out between the two of you. It looks to me, because of the emphasis of the clubs here in the inner life, that basically you are both still together primarily for money matters, you know, to be able to afford the place and whatever and the rent and the lease and the property and all that. I don't see anything here, but what I do see is this is tearing you up more than it's tearing him up, okay?
Yeah,
he's not even here. You know, out of three cards, he's not even here. It's just you, Queen of Hearts, sitting there with her heart on her sleeve going, but if only, but if only, but if only. And my advice to you would be if you do want this to work, you're going to have to first try to get through that divestment of time where everybody's doing something different and we're all so concerned with everything but each other and our relationship. And then you're going to have to deal with these spades. You're going to have to do a lot of old hurt, bad luck, inauspicious setting, and that's generally what I see, and I hope that has been of some help to you.
It has. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Broderfield. That was a very important reading. I think both of you highlighted some very key insights and interesting details about the relationship that we need to focus on. Just briefly about the signs, I think what the readings reflect is kind of a very typical pattern that happens when a Taurus and Libra hook up in some way, shape, or form. Taurus and Libra are both ruled by Venus. And so they have some type of connection, some type of spiritual connection. They both have very similar interests. There is their sensual signs, and there is something there. They often have great friendships, probably some of the best. They also have fantastic sensual affairs. The issue is it long-lasting? And they often, not so much. That's the problem. And there are some serious problems that come in because you're an earth sign, he's an air sign. There is a flirtiness and flightiness to the Libra that doesn't work as well for our Tauruses who require emotional stability. And we're seeing that in the reading, that where you two are emotionally may not be the same place. You mentioned that, for example, he has some mood swings, some temper issues and whatnot. So mood swings are something that Tauruses don't like to deal with, right? Tauruses have their own form of temper, but in general, they like stability. Both signs are looking for harmony, but whereas Tauruses kind of live in harmony, Libras struggle to find it. And so this is going to be an issue. Instead of working directly on this person and trying to bring them back, rather than trying to, rekindle the romance, because you yourself seem a little bit uncertain if it's the right thing for you, instead what it would do is general love work to bring peace, harmony, and love into the home. And if it happens to be your ex-partner, then there you go. When you do love work of this type, especially when you're in proximity with an ex or you're still friends with an ex, if they're the right person, then that the work will bring them. If not, then the work will bring the right person. Okay? So that's why I'm saying doing more general work is important rather than doing work that is directly aimed at them. What I want you to do is get yourself a bath going. Get some rue, violet leaves, get some rose petals, brew this into a tea, pour into a bath with a little bit of honey and a little bit of milk and soak into this, okay? and you are going to allow yourself to soak and luxuriate in this bath. It's very good for the skin. It's nice and soothing. Once you've done that, you're going to stand up, take the bath, and rub it upwards on your body as you pray for new love to come into your life. Do it 7 times. Step out of the bath water, let yourself air dry, gather a bit of the used bath water in a cup or a bowl, and what you're going to do is sprinkle that used bath water, just a symbolic amount of it, on your front steps, right? And ask that love be brought into your home from wherever it is, the person that you were meant to be with. Next, what you're going to do is you're going to get yourself some peace water. Take the peace water and sprinkle it around the home. This is so that the home is harmonious. Even if you and your partner do not get back together, you want to have a peaceful home. So sprinkle that around the house. Next, take a vanilla bean stalk, and you're going to wrap that petition paper. On that petition paper, you are going to write a prayer to God asking that a peaceful home be brought to you, that love be brought to you, that your ideal partner, wherever they are, who brings a happy home with you, is brought to you. You're going to wrap that in the vanilla, place it at the bottom of a bowl of sugar. Use that sugar daily. You can put a bit of it in your tea, in your coffee, in your cooking, in your baking, and whatnot. But use it often. These 3 items are going to be the key to bringing ideal love for you, shifting the kind of energy and spiritual forces that are around you, moving away from the kind of hurt, pain, doubt that you're currently dealing with, and instead bringing a harmonious love into your life. You don't need to do a lot of work. You don't need to do intense coercive work to draw in that perfect person. Just something to shift the energy. And if it turns out to be this guy, perfect. If not, then keep your mind and heart open for the ideal lover to come your way. That's what I recommend. We have quite a bit of time, so let me see if Professor Porterfield and Madam Nadia have any further suggestions to add.
I think that your ideas are brilliant, Ali, and I absolutely love the vanilla bean thing, because I think that it's important for us to remember to be sweet to ourselves, that we deserve to be loved and taken care of. And we forget it a lot of times, especially women. So I think that was brilliant, and that's all I want to say.
I agree, and I think the advice about a peaceful home is also excellent advice. I would also say to you to do this. Go and get yourself a deck of cards and take out of that deck of cards the 2 of spades and the 2 of hearts. And over one heart, write your name. Over the other heart, write his name. And keep that card with you. Put it in your purse. Keep it in your wallet. Keep it with you. Do the same for the 2 of spades, right? Your name over one spade, write his name over the other spade, and then I want you to tear that card up or burn it up to ash and take it very far away from your house and dispose of it to end any sort of duel or loggerheads that you two may be locked in.
Okay.
That is fantastic working. You know, it's very important for you to keep yourself kind of open to whatever happens from the works that are done. Because while your anxious is present, right, and there's a part of you that is interested in seeing reconciled, there is a part of you that's quite hesitant, and with good reason. There are issues there. There are problems there between you two. And, you know, the old adage, he's an ex for a reason, right? Something to bear in mind here. So keep your mind, keep your heart open. It doesn't matter if, you know, you do this love work and someone new comes in or this person comes in. What you really need is not the person to be focused on, but on what you're hoping to achieve in a relationship. So rather than saying, I want him or I want him, instead ask yourself, what is it you want in a relationship? If you're looking for emotional stability, for someone who loves you for who you are, who you can trust and who trusts you, who satisfies you physically and emotionally and mentally and so on and so forth, and that happens to be your ex, fantastic. And the work that I recommended and Professor Porterfield and everyone recommended can help to bring that about. It can help to heal the wounds, to smooth over the differences that are between the two of you, and bring the relationship back to where it needs to be. Sometimes relationships need a little bit of a touch-up, and that's what the working recommends. If, however, it brings someone else, then be ready to walk away. Be ready to say, you know what, I'm done. This was a learning experience. I learned from this. I'm going to cherish the positive memories, but now I'm ready to move on. It is a little tricky, given that you two live together. Bringing another man home isn't going to be an easy thing to do, should it come to that. So you need to plan and ask yourself, what's the next step? As you do this working, what I want you to do is keep track of your dreams as well. Because I think some of these answers will be resolved in your sleep, and the spirits and ancestors will in turn guide you. Because you're going to have to make some tough decisions. If it turns out that you do this working, you do the bath, and you wake up and you go, you know what, I need to move on. There's this other person in my life, and they're the person I need to be with. Then you need to be ready to say, what am I going to do with my ex? We live together, or there's proximity, they're in my life still. How do I move forward? You can't go into the new relationship with baggage. And that means, you know, having your ex live there or in your life in such a prominent way that they can impact the relationship. So these are some serious, serious questions that you're going to need answers to, and they're only answers that you can come up with. None of us can give you answers. But keep close attention to your dreams, your thoughts, your feelings, as you do the workings that were recommended for you. Because I do sense that as you're doing the bathing and as you're doing the working that Professor Porterfield recommended, and as you are as well, sleeping, dreaming, you're going to come to some very important conclusions, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for entrusting us with your working, with your case. We do wish you all the best, and I have no doubt that if you do this working, you will be in the right hands. Put your trust in the universe, and the universe will respond by bringing you the perfect person for you. So the bumper music is on, so you can barely hear it, and we're going to have the wonderful Papa Newt lead us into our next caller.
Support for this programming is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Reworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic contra practitioners, located online at readersandreworkers.org, and by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of missionary independent spiritual churches, located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now it's time to go to the phone and take our next client. Our next caller is calling in from area code 347 in New York. This is Christina. Christina, are you there? Hello, Christina, are you there? Uh-oh.
347, you're live. Christina or Redheart?
Okay.
Maybe not. Let me mute her and make her live one more time.
Christina, are you there? Area code 347 in New York.
Yes.
Oh, I think we heard her.
Perfect.
Christina? Yes,
Christina?
Yes, no, maybe.
Oh, no.
Okay, I guess not. We're going to move on to our...
Oh, hello. I think we have Christina. Is that you? Okay, I think we have to move on. Sorry, Councilman Ali.
Yep.
Hello.
Oh, yes. Okay, so we do have Christina here. I do apologize about this. This is a first-time caller, and she is writing about, I am going through a custody battle, and I want a reading to know how things will turn out. Will I win custody of my child? Turn it back over to you, Councilman Ali.
Thank you for that. Christina, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask a couple questions here. You are going through this custody battle. How long has this been going on for? Christina, dear, you are live. Yes, can you hear us? Okay, well, she can't hear us, but we're going to go ahead and read for this anyways, because we do have the situation under this. And hopefully if her phone works out, she's alive, she can chime in when she's available. Hopefully she hasn't muted herself or something like that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pull three cards and see how this custody battle is going to turn out for her. She wants to win custody. I'm assuming that means full custody of her child. And I am using the Rider-Waite tarot deck to see what answers we get. I do have some obstacles along the way. The first card that I have here is the Hanged Man. The Hanged Man shows us an individual who is hung upside down, arms behind their back, hung from one ankle with a halo around their head. This is a person who's bound, tied, and unable to move forward or make progress, even if they themselves think that they are innocent. This is the card of the betrayer or the betrayed, depending on which interpretation you take. Some call it the card of the traitor. There is a serious blockage here, as is evidenced from the fact that we can't even get Christina to talk on the phone. She's live, she's there, but we hear her say hi and then disappear. This is a serious problem. The Hangman says there's obstacles, not just practical legal obstacles, but spiritual ones as well. I mean, if you're going to come on the radio show, you need to be able to actually call in and use your phone. If you can't even do that, there's some problems going on there. The next card that I have is the Two of Swords. The Two of Swords shows a young woman seated on a stool or a bench, and she's got swords in her hands, crossed against her chest, and she's blindfolded against a barren backdrop. This is an image that is not dissimilar from the Justice card, but in popular depictions, Justice is meant to be blind. But here they have two swords instead of scale, indicating that justice isn't going to be served per se, that there are obstacles, and some of them are self-inflicted. Some of them are because you are unable to see what the future holds for you and take decisive action, which is why you're seeking out a reading. You're hoping to get some answers about the future. The fear of the future and what it may hold is keeping you in a state of stasis. The Two of Swords is a problematic card, along with the Hangman. It tells me that you're blocked on multiple levels. There is a spiritual block here. There are jinxes at work. But there's also a self-crippling that is happening that needs to be addressed and addressed immediately. The final card that I have here is the Knight of Pentacles. The Knight of Pentacles shows us a stationary knight. This is the only one that isn't moving. He has a golden coin in his hands, and he is looking out across a tilled field and a plowed field. And this says you may have victory in the future, but it will be slow coming. You're going to need to tend the seed that you plant. You're going to need help. You're going to need to work hard, and it's going to take a lot of your energy and a great deal of patience. I do see that eventually you can get custody, but I don't see that happening soon. I see that you're going to need a lot of work to undo the blockages, the obstacles, and the barriers that are in your way, to take decisive action, to open yourself up to, working the right angles. This means doing root work, doing uncrossing work, turning the judge or the arbiter in your favor, and then waiting patiently as the seeds you've planted can eventually, that will be blossomed and eventually harvested. So this is a difficult reading, one that promises success in the future, but no immediate release. You're going to need to, do some heavy work here. I'm going to turn this over now to Professor Porterfield, and we'll have Madame Nadia give you root work advice. So if we can get Professor Porterfield to do his reading on this situation.
Yes. Hello, Christina. I hope you can hear me. So first of all, I have to say that what I'm looking at here is very much in agreement with Conjure Man Ali. However, I have a few extra points to make. The first one is that the centermost card that I have here is the Ten of Hearts. Now, the Ten of Hearts is about a secure home, secure children, and happiness and joy. And what that tells me is that regardless of how this goes, the love that you have for your children and that your children have for you is not going to be damaged by this. Meaning, if you get custody, if you don't get custody, you're not actually going to, quote, lose your children. And I think those of us who have been through a divorce, I have, that involves children, understand what I'm saying. We don't always want to be in whatever situation, but at the end of the day, what's most important is that we retain the ability to participate with our children, to be a parent with them, and to continue to have love between ourselves and them. And I see that as being heavily grounded and secure. So that's the good news. The not-so-good news here is that that Ten of Hearts is sitting bookended between the Eight of Diamonds and the Nine of Spades. And
yeah.
So this is very much what Conjure Man Ali said. There's a lot of financial problems here. This is going to require a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of focus. And because we are looking at that Eight of Diamonds, this may actually require the addition of financial forces outside of yourself. This is often seen as a windfall or help from others. So I do encourage you to make sure you have good legal counsel. You may have to end up going to others, both for financial aid in this matter and for legal counsel. The Nine of Spades, which is the pallbearers, does not work well here and speaks specifically of continued legal problems. So this is going to be ongoing. However, I have to tell you that when I was shuffling these cards to lay them out, I had what some of us call a jumper. I had a card that came out of the deck without bidding, meaning as I'm laying them out and I'm cutting the cards and picking them back up, I've got this one card that's like, no, I'm not going to go back into the deck. Okay. So that means it's sending me an extra message to pass on to you. And here, after shuffling multiple times from the last reading, again is the Seven of Spades, which we saw in our last reading. And this tells me that there is something else going on. There is some other action happening here. I don't know what spiritual path you come from or your spouse that you're divorcing comes from, but you may want to take some moments and look into the idea that that spouse or someone at the behest of the spouse or someone just because they want to help them out and not help you out is doing some kind of work to throw a monkey wrench into your proceedings. And so I'm going to advise that you're probably going to need some level of protection or something else, but we're going to go over to Madam Nadia, and I'm sure she'll be able to offer some of that as well. And I hope this has been of aid to you.
Thank you, Professor Porterfield. I tend to agree and have a feeling that there is more than just a legal and financial problem here. I have a feeling that somebody is steering the pot against Christina and in favor of her spouse. I also threw some cards here. It's actually from an oracle, and this is what I see here is specifically an older woman. So I would not be surprised if it's the mother-in-law or another relative, somebody who's close to the spouse, because the feeling that I have that the spouse is not a very focused and organized person. But it's very serious, and I think that the fact that Christina could not even talk to us, for me, it's a big, big, big sign. It means that somebody is working her that hard that she cannot even speak, they took her voice, and she cannot receive appropriate advice. I'm really happy that we are doing this and we actually continue and hopefully she will hear that. But what I would like to suggest is, you know, talking about cemeteries, is I would like Christina to do a mirror box or a coffin box. There are very cute coffins that you can buy now in Michael's here for Halloween. They're tiny, tiny ones.
Call them
very
cute.
They are cute. They are. They're tiny and cute. But you can decorate those ones. You can do a mock funeral. You can write people's name on it. And what I would like you to do is to take something that will represent that woman. If you know who that woman is, by all means, baptize it, call it a name, make it known to spirit. If you don't know who it is, you can write my enemy or female enemy. And then the second one would be for the spouse, obviously his name you know. You can make doll babies. You can take figural candles if they're going to fit into the box. There are different ways to go about it. Let's say if you're doing figural candles, what I would do is that I would actually go to the cemetery, make a friend with a spirit there that you feel would help you. If you can go to your ancestors, somebody who would be happy to work on your behalf, or if you find a judge, that might be also very, very helpful. And what I would do is that I, in addition to mirrors, I would fill that box with a little bit of graveyard dirt. And I would say a prayer and light my candles, and I would continue praying. While I'm praying, I would also bring absinthe with me. And I would make a circle of that absinthe around the candles while you're praying, while they're still lit. Be careful not to catch fire. But what I'm seeing here is that if you are able to show confusion of the other side in court or to prove they're lying, because I have a feeling there's some lying going on, and also bring confusion to the enemy who's working against you, that is going to give you a window of opportunity. It's also going to clear your own mind, because as we know, when people start working on you, your mind becomes like cotton candy, especially when you think about those people. It's like, where's that chocolate that I wanted to eat? You just forget about those people. You can't think straight. So that is going to help. It's going to give you a window of opportunity. So you're going to be praying, you're going to offer the spirit absinthe, and you're going to put it in a circle counterclockwise around your box. When you're done praying, when you offer that, you're going to take your candles and you're going to turn them over into the box and put them out before they burn. And I would suggest being really, really focused on what you're doing and, finish them with a nice, you know, curse. That's what I would do while you're putting them out. But something like, you will never be in my life anymore, and you will leave me alone, and I will win this case. Go with whatever is in your heart. When you're done doing that, close the box, say thank you to the spirit, and bury that box in the cemetery. And what I would like you to do is that if you have those dollies with heads, let's say their heads are to the right, that side is going to go head down, meaning I want them being the hanged man. I want them to be buried head down. I don't want them to be buried horizontal. Okay, with vertical head down. So they're continue being confused while the court procedures are going. And hopefully it makes sense. But, yeah, that's what I feel needs to be done here as the first step.
Thank you, Madam Nadia. That is a very important suggestion. You certainly don't pull any punches, and that's exactly what we needed in a case like this. On Professor Porterfield, can you add a little bit more to this? I definitely see that what Madam Nadia said is very needed, but I also think a little bit of work done to pull things in her favor, sweeten the judge and whatnot, and perhaps some protection and uncrossing work might be needed. Is there something that you can offer to that, Professor?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Christina, if you can still hear us, what I would like you to do is this is going to be fairly simple, and it's just going to involve the grocery store. I want you to go to the grocery store, and I want you to buy for yourself a little pot of Vicks VapoRub. No, I'm not joking. Vicks VapoRub. And then go to the spice aisle and buy yourself some black mustard seeds. When you come home, I want you to take this Vicks. I want you to open it up. I want you to dab your finger in it, get just a little bit because it's very greasy. And I want you to go about your house, and I want you to make 5 little X's, one in each corner and one in the middle, making what we call a 5 spot, like you see on a die or on a playing card. And I want you to do that at each door, and I want you to do that at each window. And I also, if your bed has bedposts, I want you to put a little bit on the 4 bedposts as well. And that's to invoke the camphor and the eucalyptus that is in the Vicks to help protect your house and, in particular, protect your bed. If you find that you continue to have problems with your phone, as you are having today, or communicating via it when you try to talk to your legal counsel, etc., just take a little Vicks and put it on the back of your phone. Again, I'm not talking about slathering it on here. This is Vicks. It goes everywhere. It's like BBs, okay? So you're just going to use a tiny little bit. You can also just put a little tiny bit on your hands and rub it into your hands before you go out and about. Now, the next thing I want you to do with those black mustard seeds is I want you to get a plain envelope, just a regular everyday envelope, and on that envelope I want you to write the names of your spouse that you're seeking custody of the children from, his legal counsel, anyone that's involved that you can get the name of that's on his side, not your side, not your legal counsel, not the judge, no one like that, but everyone that's involved on his side, and in particular, his mother, any aunts, anyone that might fit the description that we have seen from Madam Nadia. And into that envelope, I want you to put those black mustard seeds. And when you go to have the inevitable meetings, mediations, going before the judges, etc., I want you to keep that packet of black mustard seeds in your right pocket. This is going to cause confusion amongst him and his allies. At the same time, when you go to those occurrences, again, the mediations, the law meetings, etc., and you have in your right pocket your little envelope named with the black mustard seed sealed in it, in your left pocket, I want you to have some bay leaves, again, just out of your kitchen. So you can do all of this just by going to the grocery store, bay leaves for victory. They're putting them in your left pocket because that's about your heart arm, your heart hand, your heart side. We're trying to get your children with you. We're putting the black mustard seeds in your right pocket for your right hand, your hand of strength, your hand of combat, to create confusion amongst them, and we're protecting the house just with that eucalyptus and camphor that you can get from the Vicks, and I hope that helps you.
Thank you, Professor Brookfield. Those are fantastic suggestions. I think coupled with what Madam Nadia recommended, it's exactly what this case needs. I have no doubt that if you do these workings, you will be successful. Hopefully she's still tuned in and followed along. If not, you can always listen to the archives. But I did feel quite strongly that we should take on that particular caller. So thank you both for your recommendations. We're going to have an announcement come up in Papa Newt discussing or announcing our new segment.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30; Candela's Corner, starring Candela Cambisa, Mondays 5 to 7; The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6; In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7; On Sacred Ground with Kai Armand, Wednesdays 5 to 7; The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30; and Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And now it's time for our freestyle segment with Professor Porterfield of ProfessorPorterfield.com in Denton, Texas. Take it away, Professor.
Thank you, Papa Newt. Well, good evening and good afternoon and good morning, perhaps, gang.
Today's free spell is again going to involve the graveyard. And we're going to talk this afternoon a little bit about getting rid of troubles that you may have. So if you wish to rid yourself of some troubles or bad habits, addictions, or anything of that nature, you can send them to the graveyard using this spell. What you're going to do is take the Nine of Spades from a deck of cards, and in this matter, I advise you to get a brand new deck that you're only going to use for this. You're going to take out that Nine of Spades, and you're going to turn it sideways, horizontal, and write the trouble that you wish to be rid of across the middle spade. This is because the Nine of Spades is seen as the pallbearers, the middle spade being the coffin. So you're going to be writing your trouble onto that spade, which is the coffin, to be carried to the graveyard by the eight pallbearer spades. You're going to then dress this card with banishing oil at its four corners and centers. Then I want you to get a common white candle. This can be any kind of white candle. This can even be an emergency candle, particularly if the problem is very serious. And I want you to dress it with Run Devil Run oil and place it on top of the card. You will light the candle and you will pray James 7:4. Once again, that is James 7:4. And then you will recite the 121st Psalm over the card and candle as the candle burns. State your intentions to reject the thing that is troubling you from your life and to be free of it. When this is done, I want you to wrap up the card and remaining wax in black cloth. A black handkerchief is perfect. Tie that off with black thread, and then take that bundle to the graveyard, and I want you to bury it at the graveyard. You would do this by either burying it at the grave of someone who is associated to you that you know will aid you in this, a beloved relative. To do that, you will bury it at their right hand. You can bury it at the center of the graveyard, or if you want this to quickly die and be forgotten, I advise you to bury it at the back left corner of the graveyard, which is often where unconsecrated ground in the old days or the beginnings of the potter's field were. And so that's the spell, and I hope it was a good aid to you and hope you find strength and relief to the problems that are troubling you.
I love this spell. I love it. It's great because I think it also highlights the importance. When we think of the graveyard, we often think of things that you bury and you kind of forget. So it's like death work, you know, mirror boxes we just saw with this lovely Meta Nadia, that type of work. But it's also a place where you go and you leave problems, too. You go and you leave issues. I remember, for example, a very old working, and this is kind of reminiscent of it, is if you have an issue with a court case, you were meant to take it to the cemetery of an ancestor. And the idea was you're even supposed to kind of shake the tombstone, right, or the headstone, just to wake them up, and then you were to kind of pour out the problems. You weren't to mention what you desired, like, I want custody or I want this, but all the problems. The lawyers are lying, the so-and-so is trying to trap me. The idea being you take all the negative, just like you mentioned, or the thing you want to banish, the thing you want to bury, and you leave it at the cemetery. It was a place of putting to rest problems as well, not just the place of death and destruction. There is another sign to the cemetery that I don't think is highlighted very often. So I do appreciate your spell a great deal. If you don't mind me asking, this can also be done for a specific person, right?
Yes, it can be done for a specific person, particularly if you want them out of your house, out of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You can even change this spell up if you want something a little more baleful, if we follow that. But I will say that primarily here, where we're trying to get rid of the badness, where we're trying to get rid of that thing that has gotten power over us, is the reason we're using James 4:7. And we had a little confusion of it. Was it James 7:4 or James 4:7? And the quote is, "Submit yourself then to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you."
So it's basically like a run devil run.
Right, and that's the reason we're using the run devil run.
Right, right. I like that. It's an older formula, too, something that isn't used. Banishing has become quite popular nowadays with a lot of people, but I mean, I remember run devil run in the South being way more popular. Used for a variety of different things. You lit the incense in your home, use the oils and the candles for a variety of things, getting rid of people, getting rid of troubles in your home. So I love that. Another note, do you have anything to add or any questions you have about this particular routine?
I just realized that I need to invest in some Run Devil Run, thinking about it, kind of out of it. But
I love Run Devil Run. I swear by it.
No, same here. It's an underappreciated formula. It really is. It's only in favor with a lot of new people, I think.
Yeah, it's not. It didn't get a lot of rep, but we should. I think we just reinstated it. The supporters have just reinstated it. What I really like about Professor's spells, and specifically in this case, is the use of cards. Not just because, you know, cards is my thing, but because it is small. When people think about going to the cemetery and burying, you know, boxes, things like that, and they are not comfortable working in the cemetery. I mean, you don't have to be not respectful of the cemetery, but it doesn't mean that everybody is going to be comfortable. Or maybe there are people there and you need to work faster. When you work with a card and a handkerchief and a thread and a candle that's going to burn down, you have a tiny little packet. To bury it, to sleep it in, even if there is a bunch of people around, it's quite possible. And I think it's very effective, and it's just workable, and I really, really like that. And it's also something that you don't need to buy half of the store for, right? Just get a new deck of cards, or maybe you have a new deck of cards, and you have, you know, that cards to use, and a white candle can be found anywhere. And that's it. It's perfect.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Professor Porterfield. Well, that fantastic spell, and for bringing that old-timey spirit back, which we so desperately need in these times, as us earth signs are very inclined to believe. And thank you, Madam Nadia, for being the wonderful co-host. But Papa Lou, why don't you take us out?
Thank you, Congressman Ali, and thank you, Madam Nadia, for being our special co-host today. And thank you, Professor Porterfield at ProfessorPorterfield.com in Denton, Texas, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when we'll have another special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. Once again, we come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Conjurman Ali at ConjurmanAli.com in Mission Viejo, California, and Madam Nadia at MadamNadia.com in Chicago, Illinois. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt, joining you from PapaNewt.com in San Edward, Nebraska. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and the shows are available in archive via the luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to say thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you, Papa Newt, and thank you for filling in for Miss Tammy Lee. Your golden, sultry voice was wonderful, and we do thank you for that. Professor Porterfield, as always, you are a wonderful guest, and we enjoy having you on immensely. You bring such fascinating and interesting topics, and I'm very serious about a part two. I say that so often, but I'm going to hold you to it. I hope that we can have a part two soon, because it's such an interesting topic, and I think people would desire to hear more about the work that can be done to develop that relationship that you discussed. It's desperately needed. I also want to thank my lovely co-host, Madam Nadia, for faithfully stepping in and filling in Miss Cat's shoes. It's not easy to do. You are wonderful, and we love having you as our substitute co-host. Hopefully,
my pleasure.
We will have the lovely Miss Cat back and Nagashiva, so that I can relinquish working on the board, which is such a hassle, and it always makes me appreciate him that much more every time I do. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. You make this show possible. Have a great week and good night.
Good night, everybody.